Okay, Aksamea again.
Aksamea.
Wonderful time out in the wilderness, right? So today our message is actually corresponding with the conversation we were having yesterday. And it's called, Do You Have a Wilderness Mentality? So Yahweh has all things in its timing. And from Adam's rebellion in the Garden of Eden, Yahweh allowed Satan to create a society of trading that would always be oppressive to the average everyday person, but would exalt the people who were willing to follow Satan's way to lie, cheat, compromise, and step on others to excel in Satan's society. And we know even in Ecclesiastes, in other books, I think in Habakkuk also, it talks about even making money, you know, and putting it in a pocket that seems to have holes. You know, the money goes in one pocket and out the other pocket. And although Yahweh allowed this to happen to ultimately show mankind what is the final result of rejecting Yahweh's Torah and following their own corrupt way of what they think is good and evil, Yahweh also had a plan to sanctify these called out ones throughout the 6,000-year plan. So I think if you, as a believer, if we understand this, that this isn't just something for the end time, that this is something from the Garden of Eden, you know, that Yahweh had one plan. He was going to make a kingdom of priests. He had Adam that he called out of the world. He brought in. He was going to train him. And then Adam failed at his job. And what happened? The world went downhill from there very, very quickly. And Adam gave his authority over to Satan. And since that time, you know, this is Yahweh's plan. The same way he has 6 days of work. And then the seventh day is the Sabbath. And we know the Sabbath pictures the millennial rest. A day for a year. A day is like 1,000 years. And 1,000 years is like a day. So in Yahweh's timing, he has a 6,000-year plan. 6 millennials. And then comes his millennial where he will restore everything back to the kingdom. And that's why we are the ministry of reconciliation. Because Yahweh is restoring all things starting in this last generation. And ultimately in his kingdom. So this is basically what Yahweh is doing, but he also had a plan that the people that he's calling, that he would call out and sanctify him away from that system. And that's, we see it all throughout the Bible. We see he called Abraham away from that. We see the Israelites were called. They were not allowed to make pacts. He didn't say, go there and be good neighbors. Welcome everybody into your place. He said the opposite. Don't make agreements with them. Don't allow your children to marry their children. And in many cases, he said, go in and even kill them. You know, just kill all of them when they were going into the promised land. And I know in the world, a lot of people can't understand that. But when you really understand the system that Satan set up, you realize that if they didn't do that, they would have never made it. You know, they would have been corrupted. And that's what happens many times. Even, unfortunately, I've had different youth over the years in America. And I remember one youth particularly that their family came to the Bible school, and it was a long-term Bible school. And when it was over, everybody was zealous and on fire. And this young man, you know, I think he might have been in his early 20s, he said, oh, I'm just going back to witness to my friends. Went back and never came back again, and really went in a wrong direction. Wound up not only quitting the faith, but literally, I think he may be becoming a Satanist. Tattoos all over his body, all kinds of things. So that's the key where we have to look at. It's not our job to convert anybody. You convert electricity, you don't convert people. Our job is just to be a witness. And if you think you're going in that society to change people, chances are you ain't coming out. You know, there was another guy we met one time. He wasn't part of our congregation, but he came to the feast. And this guy used to go, he lived in like a big city, in the worst area of the city. He lived in a place where there was prostitutes and bars, and he'd go into the bars and he said, no, because Yahweh called me to witness there. And I'm like, come on, give me a break. Yahweh doesn't call anybody to be in that environment. And then he's arguing, no, I know he called me this. I said, okay, well, let's, you know, see the proof of it. How long are you doing this? Oh, about 5 years. How many people came to faith? None. So we know what's going on, you know. Yahweh didn't call you to be in the end of a bar. Yahweh didn't call you to be in the worst part of town. Yahweh called you to come out of that. And that's where, again, it comes to the mentality. Your mentality means everything. Deuteronomy 28, I'm going to read 1 through 10. It says, And it shall be carefully, if you will listen to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim, taking heed to do all his commandments which I command you this day, Yahweh your Elohim will give you to be on high above all the nations of the earth. And all these blessings will come on you and overtake you if you will listen to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim. You'll be blessed in the city, and you'll be blessed in the field. The fruit of your body will be blessed, and the fruit of your ground, the fruit of your livestock, the offspring of your oxen, and the young ones of your flock. Your basket and your kneading trough will be blessed. And you shall be blessed when you come in, and you will be blessed when you go out. Yahweh shall cause your enemies that rise up against you to be stricken before your face. They will come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. Yahweh will command the blessings on you in your storehouses and all that you set your hand to do. And he will bless you in the land which Yahweh your Elohim is giving you to go. Yahweh will establish you a holy people to himself as he has sworn to you. And again, that's Kadosh, a set-apart people, you know, apart from the world. If you shall keep the commandments of Yahweh your Elohim and walk in his ways, and all the people of the earth shall see that you are called by the name of Yahweh, and they will be afraid of you. And we know this many years in Israel, you know, when we've had the feast there and we're walking with the group, all the time people coming up, who are you? You know, why are your women dressed so modest? Why are your men wearing tassels? You know, so many times when we stayed on pilgrimages and hotels and different things, people would come out. Wow, we never had a group like this before. They're so kind. They're so helpful. So people see the difference. Yahweh's plan was to separate his chosen remnant from Satan's society and train them in his Torah and word, and to show the unconverted society around them that by obeying Yahweh and staying separate from Satan's society, they'd be blessed. That was the whole point of Israel, right? It was that the world would see the blessings Israel's getting, and then they would say, hey, we want in. We also want to obey Yahweh. We also want to be part of this covenant. From the Garden of Eden, Yahweh's way with humanity was to separate those whom he was personally working with away from the rest of the society that was swayed by Satan. And many times, the way he did this was by taking his people through a wilderness journey, as we know, mentally, spiritually, and many times even physically. So we see this example from Scripture. I always say, environment is 90% of your spiritual battle. So you have to make sure you have a conducive environment that you could serve Yahweh. But within that environment, 90% of that, if you will make it, is your mental outlook. So you could be in the greatest environment in the world, but if your mental outlook isn't right, it won't mean anything. So that's what's important. Exodus 16, 2 and 3. Exodus chapter 16, 2 and 3. Says, and the congregation of the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel said to them, would that we had died by the hand of Yahweh in the land of Egypt, and are sitting by the flesh pots, and are eating bread to satisfaction. For you have brought us out in this wilderness to kill all the assembly with hunger. Wow. Can you imagine? After everything Yahweh did, after all the miracles they did, that they're actually accusing him that he brought them out there to kill them. Israel was separated from the world for 40 years in the wilderness, but never made it to the promised land because their mental outlook was wanting to be like the world around them. Numbers 14. And what amazes me about it, I understand in the world today, you know, we live in a very commercialized world. If you're used to living in a first world country, you know, like Europe or Australia or Babylon, you know, I could understand why people wouldn't want to give up all these good pleasures and pleasure-seeking things in life. But when I look at Israel, they were slaves. They were browbeaten. How on earth did they have such an obstinate mindset, you know, when they were literally slaves for all those years? And it's scary to think about. But they never embraced it. They never embraced the wilderness mindset. Their mindset was always wanting to go back, always wanting to be back, to be like the world around them, even though what they were coming out of was the worst situation you can imagine. Numbers 14, verse 1 through 4. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept during that night. And the sons of Israel murmured against Moses, against Aaron. And all the congregation said to them, oh, that we had died in the land of Egypt, or in this wilderness. Oh, that we had died. And why is Yahweh bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our infants have become a prey. Is it not good for us to return to Egypt, right? They wanted to go back. They didn't want to be in the wilderness. And they said each to his brother, let us give a leader and return to Egypt. So, you know, they weren't in slavery for a short time. It was over 200 years. You're talking about generation after generation that they were slaves there. And pleading to Yahweh because they have hard taskmasters and they're being whipped. And here it is, Yahweh delivers them. And he brings them out to a beautiful wilderness like this. He's feeding them every day. He's giving them water. He's caring for every need they have. And he's literally before them, you know, in a pillar of cloud and a fire of smoke. And what happens? All they want is to go back. And that's why I say everything is your mental attitude. You could have a feast like this and, you know, go back. And one person can say, oh, how was it? Oh, it was wonderful. It was so beautiful. And then we, you know, and we're out there in the wilderness. And somebody else could be like, oh, it was horrible. You know, oh, the mosquitoes were terrible. And it was so cold. And it was this and it was that. Everything is your mental outlook, how you look at something. So we need to be looking at it from the eyes of Yahweh. And that's why I say the Torah is Yahweh's character. It's part of him. And that's why we have to instill it in us so that it becomes part of us. Yahweh knew. Well, number one, they never embraced the wilderness experience Yahweh brought them to. They wanted to return to be part of Satan's world. Yahweh knew that all these people around them were part of Satan's society and were filled with paganism and wickedness that would only defile Israel. And he led them to integrate with Satan's society and to compromise. And if they went with these people, it would only lead them to integrate with Satan's society and compromise with Yahweh's Torah. So there's two main reasons why Yahweh sends his people to the wilderness. The first is to sanctify them, set them apart from Satan's society, to be able to allow the Ruach of Yahweh to fully work in their life. Yahweh created humans as creatures of habit. We know that, right? It's supposed to be a good thing so that when we learn his way, we'll never go back from it. And a person's environment is the main source that molds them who they will become. And Yahweh created, right, the different people all over the world, and we see it today. We have brethren in Central and South America that are very different than the brethren, say, in Europe, who are very different than the brethren in Africa, who are very different than the brethren in Asia. And I'm talking about just culture-wise. And that's one of the things we always do at the Bible school, just little things like, in your culture, how do you greet somebody? And it's everything from bowing to shaking a hand to, you know, and all the different rules. Well, it depends if the person is older, if they're younger. We all have customs. There's all different foods. You know, that's a good thing. That's the way Yahweh created it, that, you know, we have different types of environments. But according to your environment, not necessarily your culture, but your environment, it's the main source that's going to mold you who you become. You know, like I said, if I'm teaching about love to somebody who grew up in a family with 10 kids and stable parents and were loved, it's going to mean totally different to them than somebody who grew up on the streets. Or like in Liberia, at 10 and 11 years old, they were children soldiers fighting in a war with guns. So what is love going to mean to those people? You know, it's totally different depending on your environment. By being fully immersed in Satan's society of commercialism, greed, covetousness, pride, and vanity, it will definitely affect a believer's mind and even their conscience to how much fruit they'll be able to bear for Yahweh's kingdom. So again, how much of sin, I say this, how much do people do daily in life that is abomination to Yahweh? And we don't even think, and I'm not talking about just sins that are lying, stealing. I'm talking about things like social media. Social media is one of the worst abominations of today. And not only is it bad because of gossip and maligning and false accusing to people, what it does is this becomes a normal way of life, it becomes worse. So you could see today, all of it is 100 times worse than what it was 20 years ago when they started it. And it will only get worse because people get used to it. And it's easier when they're in front of somebody, they might not say something, but on social media, they'll say anything. Mock, criticize, make crude remarks, whatever it might be. So we have to make sure, because your environment is going to make the person you are. Everything starts in your mind, how you think. And your environment is everything to that. And like I said, you know, when you're looking at the environment in commercial Babylon compared to, say, like a place in Africa where we've been in places where people were looking at us like we were an alien. And we'd say, what's going on? And they say, they've never seen a white person before. They think you're sick because they've only seen black people. So they see a white person, they think your skin, there's something wrong with you. You know, something happened. They've never seen it before. There's people that come up and they touch you. They want to touch you. You know, that's how sheltered some people have been in their life, you know, compared to not. So our environment means everything. It will definitely affect a believer's mind and even their conscience, so how much fruit they'll be able to bear for Yahweh's kingdom. 1 John 2, verse 15 through 17, a scripture we've read many times, but very apropos for this. Do not love the world or the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Because all that is in the world, not some, but all that is in the world, in Satan's world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but it's of the world. And we just simply, we can't get that. You know, that's why all these little devices, people don't want to give up, you know. And in the end time, when we're looking, you know, at the mark of the beast, it's real simple. The system is already there. And that's why I say, they're saying it. Elon Musk said it, that iPhone is an extension of your hand. You don't need a chip. They might give a chip, but you don't need it. That is the mark of the beast. They have the QR code. We already went through it. We just lived it through COVID. You couldn't get into a store without putting that down there. You couldn't buy without putting that down there. You couldn't get medical attention without putting that down there. So whether it's in that phone that you live with and sleep with every night, or it's a chip in your hand, what's the difference? The system is already there. The system is part of it. And is it part of Yahweh or is it part of the world? Be honest with yourself. You know, who's creating the mark of the beast, Yahweh or Satan? And this is where your mindset and your mentality, and when you look at people like the Amish, you know, I was just saying to somebody, you know, meeting them and spending time with them, and especially some of the older men, it's one thing to understand what they believe. It's another thing to talk to them and realize that you're talking to like somebody that's not human. You know, like the guy said to me with a car, I wouldn't know what to do with a car. I would talk to it because that's what he does. He talks with his horse. So they've never seen a movie. They've never seen TV. They've never seen any of this kind of stuff, you know, the way they live. They've never owned a car. They still ride a horse and buggy. So what does that mean about their mind? Not to say they're perfect and not to say there's not, you know, ones that go the wrong way and do bad things because they're human. But their mind, what I saw was, wow, this person's mind is totally different than me. If I have a half an hour conversation with him, he probably won't understand 70% of what I'm going to say. Because my mind is filled with all these things that I've went through that a lot of them are from the world. You know, you give examples and whatnot. And I've noticed even when I went to Africa at times, you know, and you don't plan on it, but you say something that might be like a pun or something, and all of a sudden the room gets quiet. Because they have no idea what I'm talking about. You know, because they've never heard that kind of stuff. They never heard it before. But it shows you the difference of the mindset. So that is why Yahweh brings his servants to a more natural environment in the wilderness, where there's less clutter from Satan, who in scripture is called the prince of the power of the airwaves, right? He's the prince of the power of the airwaves. And, you know, when I look at the fact that Amish don't use electricity, and I say, well, electricity of itself isn't bad, right? Just have electricity to put a light on or to have a washing machine. But yeah, those things aren't bad. But where's the next thing? The next thing then is, well, radio isn't bad. And then the next thing, well, TV isn't really bad. The next thing, well, if I only use internet for this. And then the next thing is like everybody else. You have all the evils that everybody else has. So the best thing is just don't have it. And then you never have to worry about that, right? Don't even get on that road. Because it didn't start with that iPhone. You know, when it started out, right? There was a time 25, 30 years ago, none of us had cell phones. There was no such thing as a cell phone. But then you got that first cell phone that went to the next one, and went to the next one, and went to the next one. Or, you know, that I remember the first computer I had, this gigantic box, you know, and you're trying to work with it. And it's like just little dots on there. But then when the next one comes out, you want the newer one. You want the, it's human nature. And here we are today. So unless you make that choice in your life to say, enough. Enough. He's the prince of the power of the airwaves. Satan is only bringing these things to deceive people to that mark of the beast, where you're giving full allegiance of your mind over to him. And again, whatever you focus on becomes most real to you. So the things that are on your mind. I was telling you recently, I met a man that has followed our ministry since about 2014. He has a family and they left Babylon. And he was telling me, you know, he has six kids. He said, not only haven't my children ever seen a Disney movie, he said, my children have never seen a movie, any movie. And I was like, wow, you know, because they're trying to keep them away from the world. They're trying to keep them away from all these things, from the prince of the power of the airwaves, radio, TV, internet, social media, iPhones, to constantly condition people 24/7 to his way of commercialism, greed, and perversion. The wilderness is a solitary place where a believer can meditate and focus on the true calling and relationship with Yahweh in a natural setting away from the commercialism of Satan's society. And you know the way Satan does. He sugarcoats everything at first. When TV first came out in the 1950s, right, he didn't bring all the things you see today. What does he start out with? Father Knows Best and these things that seem like family-type shows to hook people into it. But as every generation goes, every decade, the 60s became worse, the 70s, the 80s, to TV that you can't even look at now. I mean, it's absolutely boring. But that's the way he is. First, he gets you addicted to it, and then he brings you more evil from it. And then at that point, because we are creatures of habit, you're addicted. You know, through my life, I met many, many people addicted to cigarettes, addicted to alcohol, addicted to things. And they see, once they're addicted, they see how bad it is in their life and they just can't stop it. You know, I've seen people even when they had cancer and they couldn't stop smoking and they knew they were going to die, but they were addicted to it. And that's a idol. And you feel sad for the person because they don't want to do it. They wish they never started. And now they're at a point where their body just craves it so much that there's nothing they can do. So the better thing is never get to that point to begin with, because it's a terrible place. It's a terrible place. Jacob 4 in verse 4. Let's turn to Jacob. Chapter 4 in verse 4. Says, adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship of the world is enmity with Elohim? Whoever then purposes to be a friend of the world is an enemy to Elohim. Or do you think that vainly the scripture says the pride dwelling in us lusts with envy, right? So friendship of the world, it's not something where we're to be a friend of the world and try to coerce them. No, we're to be separate from it. It is more than just being tempted and conditioned by Satan's devices. It is submitting to our corrupted human nature when we're friend of the world, instead of denying it and allowing the ruck to change us to hate the things of the world, to actually abort. Matthew 6, 22 through 24. The lamp of the body is the eye. Then if your eye is pure, all your body is light. But if the eye is evil, all your body is dark. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one is able to serve two masters. He will either hate the one and love the other, or will cleave to the one, and he will despise the other. You're not able to serve Yahweh in wealth. And I think about it, you know, just the way human nature, the corruption, like sometimes you see it on a highway, right? There could be someone broken down on the highway, and 100 cars can go by, not one person stops to help. Yet, when there's an accident, and there's blood and death, how many people want to, you know, come in there and they want to see it? You know, you would think the opposite. But people, there's something that draws human beings to horror and ugliness and terribleness like that. And it's the corrupted human nature. Everything starts in our mind or our heart. The heart is just a muscle, the pumps. It's really your mind. If you love the worldly things of Satan's society, it is opposite of the love of Yahweh's kingdom mindset. If you stay in commercial Babylon, you'll be indoctrinated, brainwashed by the prince of the power of the airwaves and never really embrace the mindset of the wilderness experience. It's two totally opposite universes. So what is the answer? We continue here in Jacob 4, verse 7. Then submit to Yahweh, resist the devil, and he will flee for you. So, and like I say, you got to get that right, because there's people that don't submit to Yahweh, and they're trying to resist the devil without submitting to Yahweh. You have to submit to Yahweh first. You can't do it on your own. You need the spirit of Yahweh. You need his ruach. You know, submit to Yahweh, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to Elohim, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, sinners. Purify your hearts, double-minded ones. Be distressed and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to shame. Be humbled before Yahweh, and he will exalt you. So we're going to have 1,000 years to have a lot of fun and rejoice and laugh. This is not that time. We're going into the worst time the world has ever known and ever will know. And again, we didn't choose this. You could have been born in 1860 in Little House on the Prairie, or you could have been born in 1492, you know, when Columbus is discovering America. You could have been born in the time of the Israelites. But we don't choose that. But we were born now, and there's a lot of blessings to it. We will be the first ones to go into the kingdom, you know, and there's a lot of believers before our time that wish they could see the things we're seeing now. We're seeing it from the end of the book. So many things that they wondered before, we know, because we're at the end of the book. But at the same rate now, we have to get serious about it. We have to mature, we have to live up to our human potential, and we have to get ready to be kings and priests in the kingdom of Yahweh. Because that's going to be for eternity. Once these next few years are over, that will be our existence for the rest of eternity. We have to resist Satan's society, his ways of commercial Babylon, have a heart to hate the world and submit to Yah. Which brings us to the second most important point of the wilderness of Yahweh is, first, like I said, sanctifying his people and bringing them into a wilderness environment. The wilderness cleanses your mind, humbles you to have a better faith, relationship with Yahweh, and trust in him for all. So the second thing is our relationship. That's the second point why Yahweh brings people to the wilderness. Cleanses your mind, humbles you to have better faith, relationship with Yahweh for all. Deuteronomy 8. Verse 1 through 10. You shall be watchful to do every commandment which I am commanding you today, so that you may live and may multiply and may go in and possess the land which your father, which Yahweh has sworn to your fathers. That's the ultimate goal. And you will remember all the ways which Yahweh your Elohim caused you to go these 40 years in the wilderness, in order to humble you, to try you, to know that which is in your heart, whether you will keep his commandments or not. Like I say, life is a test, and the wilderness now is the biggest test. And he has humbled you and caused you to hunger, and caused you to eat the manna which you had not known, and your fathers had not known, in order to cause you to know that man will not live by bread alone, but man will live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahweh. Your clothing did not wear out on you, and your foot did not swell these 40 years. I say I'm not up to 40 yet, but I have one shirt that is 32 years old now. So we'll see. Maybe I'll wear it into the millennium. You know, I have a pair of shoes that's more than 25 years old. Bottoms were falling out, but I got to glue them. But wow, 40 years is a long time. And you have known with your heart as a man disciplines his son, Yahweh your Elohim disciplines you. And you will keep the commandments of Yahweh your Elohim to walk in his ways and to fear him. For Yahweh your Elohim brings you into a good land, a land of streams of waters and fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills. A land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates. A land of olive oil and honey, right? All the things of the harvest now, the Sukkot harvest. A land in which you shall eat bread without want, you shall not lack anything in it. A land whose stones are iron, and you will dig copper out of its mountains. And you will eat and be satisfied, and you will bless Yahweh your Elohim in the good land which he has given to you. So that's what the wilderness, like I say, although it's the only road to the promised land, it's not the promised land. You don't want to wind up being left in the wilderness. You want to make it to the promised land. Yahweh separated his chosen people from Satan's society. He also allowed them to be able to live and produce without having all the worldly influence that Satan's society brings. The people only needed faith in Yahweh for everything. And then he would be their ultimate provider and protector from any given situation. The more that someone showed faith in Yahweh and came out of the system of Satan, the more they were free and happy and growing in the mind and will of Yahweh. And that's what Satan tricks people into, the opposite. That somehow Christianity, right, that freedom comes through sin. You could break the Torah. It doesn't matter. The law is nailed to, you know, a tree or whatever they say. But yet, it's sin that brings bondage. It's sin. When you commit sin, if you kill somebody, you're going to be in prison. You're going to be behind bars. That's the bondage. Not being obedient. It's only blessings for obedient. So that's Satan's deception there. Deuteronomy 29, verse 5. Says, and I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your garments have not worn out from you, and your sandals have not worn off your foot. Deuteronomy 1 and 29 through 32. And I said to you, do not be terrified and do not be afraid of them. Yahweh your Elohim, who goes before you, shall fight for you, according to all that he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness, where you have seen how Yahweh your Elohim has borne you as a man bears his son, in all the way which you have gone until you have come to this place. Yet in this thing you are not believing in Yahweh your Elohim. And I think that's a really, really important one for us. Yahweh cared for every single need, yet they still did not believe. They didn't have the wilderness mindset. And my question is, how about you? Because what you have to realize is, as we go to the wilderness, right, Yahweh is there with us. You have to look at these stories of the Israelites, and they were in a much worse wilderness. Some of us are going to be there soon, but, you know, it's desert down there. You know, it's sand and it's desert, and you really can't grow anything, you know, and there's no rain. But for most people today, in the wilderness and the kibbutzes and the communities, it's not like that. It's the opposite. You have food and you have growth and you have... And we saw that through Shemitah. I can't believe, not only the fruit, but I can't believe how many brethren and elders sent me photos and reports of all the fruit, all the vegetables that was growing on their own. Cucumbers and tomatoes and, you know, you name it, zucchini and all kinds of stuff that was just growing up. So that's the key to it. Faith is really simpler than we think. It's just believing in Yahweh. So you could say it, but you got to show it. And what that means is you're going to act on what you believe, right? Faith is action. Faith is deeds. So either you believe that Yahweh is here with us in this wilderness or you don't. And if he's here, then he's going to provide for our needs because he tells us he will. So that's where, yes, in Satan's society, it's impossible. Even what they said to Yeshua, you know, when he was saying, with man, it's impossible, but with Yahweh, all things are possible. And that's the key. You know, it's just like I said with Shemitah, it's not about just storing up food for the future. It's about allowing Yahweh to bless you where he wants to bless you. And that's where Yahweh is in the end time. He's in the wilderness. You know, he tells the people, flee Jerusalem, go to the wilderness. That's the thing he's telling his people in the last days. And he's there in that wilderness. Yahweh realized that if he kept Israel and Satan's society with disbelieving pagans, that instead of the Israelites affecting the pagans around them, the Israelites would actually turn away and follow the pagan false customs of the people that they lived with. Numbers 25, we see this. Remember when Balak came to Balaam and he said, curse Israel for me? And Yahweh wouldn't allow it. And every time he tried to curse Israel, he wound up blessing Israel. And then Balaam, though, who was a bad person, he realized, you know what? I can't curse Israel. Yahweh wouldn't allow it. I'll trick them into allowing them to curse themselves. Because you can do that. You do reap what you sow. Numbers 25, look what it says. This is after that now with Balaam. It says, Israel lived in Shittim, and the people began to fornicate with the daughters of Moab. And they called the people to the sacrifices of their Elohim. And the people ate and bowed themselves to their Elohims. And Israel was joined to Baal Peor, and the anger of Yahweh burned against Israel. And you, like I said, Satan has the same playbook, you know, and that's the same thing he's trying to do today. He knows that he can't curse you. I showed you, if you're obedient, Yahweh's blessing is upon you. There's nothing he could do against you. So what does he try to do? He tries to get you to curse yourself. He tries to get you to be all consumed with the things that he's giving you in the world, right, of commercial Babylon. He tries to get you to be so busy that you have no time for Yahweh, for prayer, for Bible study, for meditation, for fasting. And that's what he's trying to do. Numbers 14 and verse 21. Numbers 14 and verse 21. It says, but as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of Yahweh. Hallelujah. For all the men who are seeing my glory and my miracles, which I have done in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tried me these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, they will not see the land which I have sworn to their fathers. Yea, not one of those who provoked me shall see it. And my servant Caleb, because there's another spirit in him, and he is fully following me, I will bring him into the land which he has gone, and his seed shall possess it. So, oh, what a terrible thing that must have been. 40 years to be in the wilderness and not make it to the promised land. And it wasn't just a few. It was the vast majority. Only 2 adults out of roughly 2 million people made it. And it didn't have to be that way. All they had to do was trust Yahweh. All they had to do was believe in him. And he was providing for them. Can you imagine every single day you wake up, you don't even have to think about it. The man is out there. Water coming out of a rock. And Yahweh's presence being with them. And they're seeing that presence before their eyes. And what do they say? You took us here to kill us. You want to kill us. Because of their mentality. Because they had a worldly mentality. And they refused. They refused to surrender that to Yahweh. And that's what he says here. You know. You have to have a different spirit. And that spirit only comes by the Ruach HaKodesh. It's not going to come by the world. You're not born with it. You have to choose it. You have to deny your worldly spirit. You have to get baptized. You have to have hands laid on you. You have to have the spirit of Yahweh living in you. And then you have to surrender to that the rest of your life. That in itself even doesn't do it. Let's go back to verse 6 there in chapter 14. And Yehoshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of whom spied out the land, tore their garments. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we into which we pass to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If Yahweh has delighted in us, then he will bring us into the land and will give it to us, a land flowing with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against Yahweh. And you do not fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their defense is turned away from them, and Yahweh is with us. Do not be afraid of them. And you know, like I said, COVID was a blessing to us because it showed us what's coming, but we haven't seen anything yet. It's going to get big. We haven't even seen the fifth seal, which I believe is very close, where a lot of our brethren are going to start being martyred. We've had some brethren and some elders be imprisoned in the last year, and we've seen some persecution, but it's going to be on a worldwide scale. And this is where, like I say, you better understand what you believe because you will not die for a doubt. But for me, if Yahweh is ready to take me now, take me. Because I know 1,000% my next waking moment, I'm in his kingdom. I'm not living to preserve this flesh. I'm living to die to this flesh. I'm living to preserve the spirit that's in me forever. That's all that matters. So he who tries to save his life will lose it, but he who loses his life for Yahweh's sake will have it for eternity. And you either believe it or you don't. And if you believe it, then you become a powerful worker for Yahweh because there's nothing on this green earth that you are going to put before him. There's nothing that will be a priority more than his kingdom because you know his kingdom is forever. You, it's world without end. It's not the end of the world. It's world without end. It's the end of Satan's world, the end of Satan's society. But Yahweh is world without end. Joshua and Caleb truly embraced the mindset of the wilderness, and not only physically but also mentally, having a different spirit and stayed separate from the world around them. They entered the promised land because they trusted and believed and Yahweh's promises. And the same Elohim that was there 3,500 years ago with them is the same one that's sitting with us today and having his spirit upon us. And like I said, we either believe it or we don't. Revelation 12 and verse 14. Revelation 12 and verse 14. And 2 wings of a great eagle were given to the woman, the congregation, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished there for a time, times, and half a time away from the serpent's face, right? So we read this many times. This is the congregation going to the wilderness, right? But Yahweh, like I said, sometimes that Uman and the Thuman, he really like will highlight something. And he highlighted something to me when I was putting this together that was very encouraging. So I want to read it again to you. The wings of the great eagle were given to the woman, two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place. It's a specific place. We talked about that. Where she is nourished. Why are we worrying? Like Yeshua says, why do you worry about what you eat and what you wear? That's what the pagans do. Yahweh says when he takes the woman to the wilderness, where she is nourished there. She is nourished there. What does that mean? Song of Solomon 8 in verse 5. Song of Solomon 8 in verse 5. Says, who is this who comes up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved? I awakened you under the apple tree. There your mother travailed with you. There she travailed, she bore you. You know, Yahweh's presence is with his people in the wilderness. There's one place where Yeshua will be with the people directly. But the wilderness should be like the Garden of Eden to us, right? It's all over again. It's the same way that he took Adam out of the world into the Garden of Eden, where everything was provided for him. It's the same thing he's doing for us in the end time. Everything is full circle. So we don't have to fear the wilderness. We have to fear the society out there. You have nothing to fear in the wilderness because he always says, you will be nourished there. So that's what the Israelites did. They went out to the wilderness and they're like, nourished? We're out here in sand and desert and no water. You took us here to kill us. Wow. While he's bringing manna from heaven, while he's having water come out of a rock, and Yahweh takes us in stages, right? We might be in that same position. We might be in the wilderness out there in a place like Saudi Arabia where he's going to have to do that. But he's very patient with his people. And up to now, to prove his point, we have more than 30 communities. And there's none of them that are in Saudi Arabia. Our communities right now are in the most, you know, places where everyone, and they're most of them, if not all, or just about all, are in third world places. And they're prospering like crazy, you know? Elder Vincent was telling us, right, that when they went there, they told him, you can't grow here. Nothing grows in this place. You're wasting your time. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, you know. And what happens? Everything starts growing like wildfire. You know, same thing happened in Israel. Before 1945, Israel was a barren wasteland. You know, it was just like Jordan, like a desert. And yet when Yahweh started bringing Israel back to the land in 1945, all of a sudden things changed. Artesian wells started coming up from nowhere. You know, our organic growing like they do. So many things. Because Yahweh is a restorer. And either, like I said, you're not going to get through this in the end on a hope. You have to believe this with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And if you want anything to do with Satan's world, it's just proof you don't believe it. Because it's the opposite. It's a facade. It's Disneyland, right? You go to Disneyland, everything looks like candy and cotton candy and popcorn on the outside. But you walk through that door, and what is it? It's a facade. There's nothing there in the door. It's all fake. But Yahweh's kingdom is real. The wilderness is real, and what he will do for his people is real. The woman is nourished in the wilderness, meaning she's given what she needs for growth and maturity. That's what that word means. That in the wilderness, she's nourished. She's given what she needs for growth and maturity. She is supported, sustained, and nurtured. Supported, sustained, and nurtured to become the bride of Messiah. That's what it's about. And it's not 40 years. You know, it's a time, times, and a half of times. It could be as little as a year. It could be as much as 3.5 years. It depends on those words, you know, how they're interpreted. But it's not more than that. It's not 40 years. And she goes there to become the bride of Messiah. She goes there to get this transformation that's happened when Yeshua returns to finish it. Exodus 16 in verse 4 says, and Yahweh said to Moses, behold, I am will rain bread from the heavens for you. And the people shall go out and gather the matter of a day in its day so that I may test them whether they will walk in my Torah or not. So he didn't give them for a month. He didn't give them for a year like Shemitah, we have to prepare. He said, I'm going to give it to you day by day so that I'm going to test you whether you really believe it. You have it today. Do you believe that I'm going to do it tomorrow? Drop down to verse 13. And what happens? And in the evening It happened in the evening. The quail came up and covered the camp, and in the morning a layer of dew was around the camp. We see quail quite a bit. We see them all running around and whatnot. We're like, okay, have your fun now. You know, when the time comes, we know there'll be maybe a foot of those quail or more or whatever. And the layer of dew went up, and behold, something small on the face of the wilderness, scale-like, small like the hoarfrost on the earth. And the sons of Israel looked, and they said to each brother, what is it? That's what manna means, right? What is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, this is the bread which Yahweh has given to you for food. This is the thing which Yahweh commanded. Gather it, each one according to the mouth of his eating, an omer for the bread. By the number of your souls you shall take for each man who is in your tent. And so the sons of Israel did, and they gathered, the one gathering much and the one gathering little. And they measured with an omer, and the one gathering much did not have too much, and the one gathering little did not have any need. Each one gathered according to the mouth of his eating. Wow. So there we are. So that word, nourish, also means to feed with food, right? So Yahweh is saying, he tells us, number one, he has a specific place for his people. Tells us, number two, he's going to take his people there. And he tells us, number three, don't worry, I'm going to take care of you. Now all we have to do is believe. We don't have to worry. We don't have to, you know, get nervous. All we have to do is believe it. Because that's his promise. And again, he even showed us through Israel how he can do it. You know, there's a story in the Bible. I'm not going to go there. You probably remember it. But it was when there was a great famine in Israel. And he prophesied to the prophets, you know, that by this time tomorrow, you know, that the people are going to be eating all this stuff and there'll be all this food. And there was the guard there that said, how could that be? If this would happen, if that would happen, there's no way that you could feed these people. And what did the prophet say to him? He said, you'll see with your eyes, but you're not going to eat it. And when it happened and all that food was there and the people rushed the gate, this guy got crushed in the gate because he didn't believe it. So if Yahweh says something, you know, that's all we need to know. His word says it, and that we believe it. We don't know how he'll do it. In the end time, he may do it the same way. He may have manna come down every day, or he may do it totally different. All we know is he promised us that he will care, and that's his thing. So like I said, he's going to nourish. She goes to the place where she is nourished, given what she needs for growth and maturity, supported, sustained, and nurtured, but also means to give food to. And the believers at the time will not be able to buy and sell without taking the mark. So he has to give us food. So Yahweh will feed the faithful remnant during this time. Revelation 2 and verse 17. Very interesting scripture. You know, the seven churches in the end time. And look what he says. He says, the one who has an ear, hear what the Spirit says to the congregations. To the one overcoming, I will give him to eat of the hidden manna. You know, there might be manna right here that Yahweh has hidden somewhere. I will give him to eat of the hidden manna, and I will give him a white stone, and the stone a new name having been written, which no one knows except the one receiving it. Wow, isn't that nice? Each of us in his kingdom, a name that he has there. So Yahweh to feed his remnant with the hidden manna, if they overcome. That's the key to it. So if it's doubt, you got to overcome doubt. If it's anger, you got to overcome your anger. If it's fear, you got to overcome your fear. Whatever it is, we have to overcome. And then Yahweh says, these are the promises we get. Let's go back to Song of Solomon. Because, like I said, this should be the most exciting and happiest time of our lives as believers because of what's happening now. You know, it's a marvelous time for the last 2,000 years just to be called by Yahweh. Every believer that has ever been called, that has been baptized, they're laying in the grave. They're waiting for the resurrection. So every single believer for the last 2,000 years is blessed beyond measure. Because they're all going to be first fruits to Yahweh when he returns. But now as we're in the end of the age, and now that we're in these last few years, we have a blessing upon every blessing. Because there's the remnant today that will be part of that 144,000 that will literally go and succeed where Israel failed. And where only 2 people out of 2 million enter the promised land, here it's going to be the opposite. You know, Yahweh will get the rebels away from the congregation to begin with, but then the remnant comes through. And that's when we read Song of Solomon, this is all about Yeshua and his bride. This is about us. This is about his people in the end time. And the love and the passion that he has for us, it should turn our hearts. You know, it makes me cry reading this sometimes. So let's go to the Song of Solomon, chapter 1, starting in verse 8. And listen to the words that Yeshua says about his bride, about you. If you yourself do not know, most beautiful among women, go into the footsteps of the flock and feed your kids beside the tents of the shepherds. Oh, my love, I have compared you to my mares in Pharaoh's chariots. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments. Your neck is strings of beads. We will make you ornaments of gold and studs of silver. While the king is in his circle, my spikenard gives its fragrance. A bundle of myrrh is my beloved to me. He shall lie between my breasts. My beloved is to me like a cluster of henna and the vineyards of Engedi. Behold, you are beautiful, my love. Beautiful, you are beautiful. Your eyes as doves. Behold, you are beautiful, my beloved, yea, pleasant. Also, our couch is green. The beams of our house are cedars, our rafters are as fir. So he's using his creation in metaphoric ways, but showing this is the deep relationship, the deep love he has with his bride in the end time. Song of Solomon 4 and verse 7. He says, you are beautiful, my love. There is no blemish in you. Again, and think of it all, of course, in a spiritual sense. Come with me from Lebanon, my spouse. With me from Lebanon. Look from the top of Amana, from the top of Senir in Hermon, from the lion's dens, from the mountains of the leopards. You have ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. You have ravished my heart with one of your eyes, with one chain of your neck. Drop down to verse 11. Your lips, my spouse, drip like the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the scent of your garments is like the scent of Lebanon. Wow. This is Yeshua. His deepest, innermost feelings of his bride in the wilderness. Because that's where the bride is, right? She is in the wilderness. Isaiah 8, 16 and 17. It says, bind up the testimony and seal the Torah among my disciples. I will wait on Yahweh who hides his face from the house of Jacob, and I will look to him. I will wait on Yahweh. And that's what we're doing. That's what the wilderness is about. It's about waiting on Yahweh. The bride waits on Yeshua in the wilderness. Back to Song of Solomon, chapter 3 and verse 6. Who is this who comes out of the wilderness like columns of smoke, right? It's columns of smoke. They rise up to the heavens. It's high. He's saying this. It's like a tower of strength. Who is this who comes out of the wilderness like columns of smoke, sacrificing as incense, myrrh, and frankincense from all the powders of the merchants? This is the bride in the wilderness. And again, all of our brothers and sisters that have gone before us, the great example, they're laying in the grave. They're waiting for the resurrection. But this is about us in the end time. This is about the most intimate relationship that Yeshua has with his people in the very last days. Verse 11, same chapter. He says, go forth, O daughters of Zion, and see the King of Peace with the crown in which his mother crowned him on his wedding day, even on the day of the gladness of his heart. So he is getting all excited. He's all excited about us because we're getting to that point where we're getting to that point of overcoming, of perfection. The bride is coming out of the wilderness, right? She goes into the wilderness, not ready, but she comes out of the wilderness. And that's what the wilderness is all about, like I was reading before. It's about us totally transforming ourselves from anything of that corrupted human nature into Elohim, into a child of Yahweh. Song of Solomon 6 and verse 9, a really great scripture. Look what he says. But my dove, right? Yonah, the dove. My perfect one is ikad, is united. So the bride, the congregation, they come out of the wilderness, ikad. And that's why I say that sometimes when we were starting these communities, people had the wrong impression. They kept thinking it was money, right? And money doesn't make a community. You know, money helps with anything, to buy things, but money doesn't make it a community. Because if you look at the places in the world that have the most money in the first world, we don't have any communities because people wouldn't do it. They wouldn't sacrifice. They wouldn't give everything up for something else. They don't have the mindset. And that's what happens. Money brings this false sense of independence there. Where are the communities? In the third world places, the poorest places that are there. But what happens in the wilderness? The bride becomes ikat. They're losing of themselves. They're becoming one there in that wilderness. And I've seen it, you know, because when we started out almost 10 years ago now, you know, it wasn't an easy road. And things were difficult at first because people were coming with that corrupted worldly mindset. But as time went on, they've shed that. And again, things are still not perfect. We're still in the flesh. But for the most part, wow, these communities are unbelievable. You know, that Yahweh is transforming his bride in the wilderness. Revelation 19 and verse 7. Let us rejoice and let us exalt and let us give glory to him, because the marriage of the Lamb came and his wife prepared herself. That's what the wilderness is all about. And that's what Yahweh says. You know, when we've done the Bible school now for close to 20 years, and I understand my job is to set the environment. That's what my job is. So that's why it has to be in a particular place. It has to be in a place that's conducive for you to learn. It can't be where there's distractions that are there. And you don't come there. You don't have to worry about what you're going to eat. You don't have to worry about the food. You don't have to worry about all this stuff. You're there to perfect yourself. So I have to make that environment. And that's what Yahweh's saying now in the end time. He's saying, don't worry what you're going to eat when you get there. Don't worry how you're going to survive. Don't worry about, you know, where you're going to sleep. I'll take care of all that. You come and get yourself to surrender to me, and I'll take care of the rest of it. Let us rejoice and exalt, and let us give glory to him, because the marriage of the Lamb came and his wife prepared herself. That's all we have to do. That's our job, preparation. And it was given to her that she should be clothed in fine linen, pure and bright, for the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints, right? The white garments. And he said, right, blessed are the ones having been called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he said, these words of Yahweh are true. She comes out of the wilderness, ikad. Pure in white, with white garments, overcoming. As long as we believe, and as long as we work on it. Last scripture, Ephesians 5. But the bride is getting out every spot and wrinkle of the wedding garments. Same way in the world, you know, if a woman was getting married, she wouldn't have an old wrinkly dress. She would get that dress all ready and all spotless on her wedding day. Ephesians 5. Starting in verse 6. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for through these things the wrath of Yahweh comes on the sons of disobedience. Then do not become partakers with them. For you then were darkness, but now light in the Master. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, and you must discern what is acceptable before our Master. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather condemn them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things done by them in secret. But all things being condemned are exposed by the light and are clearly revealed, for everything having been revealed is light. Because of this, he says, arise, sleeping ones, and rise from the dead ones, and Messiah will give you light. Then watch how carefully you walk, not as unwise, but as wise ones. Redeeming the time, because the days are evil. And that's where we are. You can't be wasting time anymore. We got to redeem the time. So I'm saying the time, every day that goes by, yes, we're one day closer to the kingdom, but we also have one day less to prepare. And that's why we, if we want to live to this great potential that Yahweh created us for, we have to redeem the time. We got to take that time back. You know, Satan is a time waster, and that's what he wants to try to get you to do, but we have to redeem it. For this reason, do not be foolish, but understanding what the will of Elohim is. That's where we are at. Can't be foolish. We have to understand what the will of Elohim is, and I think we do. We have to redeem the time, because the days are evil. If we don't prepare now and get to the wilderness mindset, we won't be there. You got to have that mindset to get there. And like I said, there's going to be a lot of people that get turned away because they never got the mindset. They're only going when the panic comes, right? And we've seen it. We saw it with COVID. I saw this during 9-1-1. We were in America right before 9-11 and the towers fell. And I remember we had many meetings around America, and everywhere we went, people told us, don't go back to Israel. Because there was war happening at that time, and they said, oh, somebody had a vision that I was going to get killed. Somebody had this going on. You know, and they were all worried about it. Well, we go back, and then 9/11 happens, and the same people that were pleading with us not to go to Israel were trying to contact us. They're contacting my dad, and how can I get in touch with him? How do we get out of here? How do we get out? And like panicking, you know, because they never prepared. And you can't be like that. You can't be like a leaf in the wind going back and forth. You know, we got to get some backbone now. And the way you get that backbone is by building character, by being mature, by having a relationship with Yahweh. Because people are going to be fearing. And it says in Revelation, because of the things that are coming, they're going to be scared to death. But it shouldn't be the people of Yahweh. Because we understand it. We already know it. We know, like I said, we read the book. We know we win in the end. So it's not fear that should be motivating us. It should be faith. The wilderness is the only road to the promised land. In the end, Yahweh will take his remnant through another wilderness experience to accomplish what Israel failed in the first wilderness experience. Because now we have the rock, the mind of Yahweh, to learn from and embrace the wilderness like we should. But it's got to be written in our heart. Yahweh also promises to nourish and provide for his bride completely in the wilderness experience. And we got to bank on that promise. You know, he says it. He's going to nourish us, right? Support, sustain, give us what we need for growth and maturity, and even food. Just like he did for Israel in Egypt, he will do for his bride leaving commercial Babylon. Environment is 90% of our battle, and there is no better environment than the wilderness, but we have to have the wilderness mentality to embrace it and overcome. Chag Sameach.